This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane. When I was little, I remember being afraid to go to bed at night for fear that the monsters who lived in my room were going to get me, whatever that meant. I'm sure many of you had those same fears of the darkness when you were a child, too. My guest, Al Alvarez, has written a book called Night, and it's about the anxieties, the dreams, the creativity, the life that happens in the dark. Al Alvarez is a poet and literary critic, as well as a writer of fiction and nonfiction. He's written about a wide range of topics, from suicide to divorce to mountaineering to poker, which he loves and plays competitively. I spoke to Al Alvarez in London, where he lives, about what it was about the dark that scared him as a child. He told me he wasn't exactly sure that monsters did not inhabit his nighttime fantasies. He said it was at night when he could gauge the unhappiness in his family, for it was after he went to bed that he heard his parents' fights. But now, in his mid-60s, Alvarez no longer fears the night.
What I was trying to do in this book was to try to recreate it, because my problem is that it's gone. It really went. And I just remember it as a fact of being totally terrified of darkness. And then it had gone. And so it's kind of difficult to try to piece together what created this thing, yes?
Well, when did you begin to feel this fear of darkness leave you?
Oh, that's simple. That was, it happened, I think, in the Blitz. We were in London during the Blitz, and in fact, I wasn't packed off to boarding school. I was actually packed off to boarding school a little bit late, as it were, to make sure the Blitz was over. We stayed in London during the Blitz. Everybody else sent their children away out of London. My parents went back to London. They were kind of a little bit disorganized. But the thing about the Blitz was that there was all this mayhem going on, and it was just exciting. If you were 10, 11 years old, or whatever it was, 12 years old, all, you know, the planes coming over, the bombs coming down, the mayhem itself, it was kind of terrific. It was like being part of some adventure movie. You see, at that age, you don't imagine death. I would say there were people. I was at one of the few day schools that was at that time that was still functioning in London, and you know, there were fellow pupils who didn't come back, you know, who got bombed, but we weren't aware of that, you know, and the kids don't register death in that way, or didn't seem to. And what it was terrifically exciting. And so what I think now, actually, I think it just occurred to me now that what happened to me was that I lost the terror of dark and replaced it by the exact opposite. I became an adrenaline junkie. Because basically I've done all sorts of things, you know, I've been a serious rock climber. I used to rally cars. I've done a lot of flying in old aeroplanes and things, but I play high stakes poker, but nothing will ever come up to the excitement of the London Blitz.
Well, it's kind of confounding to hear you describe that somehow the London Blitz, which clearly put your life in danger, was the cure for your fear of the dark, which, as you say, was a fear of a kind of unnamed whatever.
I think it's not all that rare. The psychiatrist Bruno Bettelheim was in Dachau and Buchenwald, and he wrote about those experiences. He wrote a couple of papers about those experiences. And he says there that, interestingly enough, that people with really serious psychiatric disorders, sort of paranoids, did actually rather well in the concentration camps, because what happened in the concentration camps was that the daily reality, which the kind of the routine reality of life in these places, was so unimaginably terrible that it way surpassed any kind of private fears and fantasies. And so suddenly they seem to be living in the same world. And maybe that, in a very minor way, is what happened to me in the Blitz.
Well, how close did the bombing come to where you and your family were living in London?
A bomb landed literally opposite us. What it did was it sliced the side off the house, and the one wall of this detached house fell away, and there were all these people in bed because a lot of people didn't bother to go down into the air raid shelters. And they're all in bed, and they sort of suddenly were woken up by this terrible bang and the fact that they were, the wall had gone, and they were staring out at the night. And it was somehow or other, if you were a kid, my mother got very frightened and used to go and hover at the top of the cellar stairs. But I was much more frightened of what might be in the cellars than what was coming down from the skies, courtesy of Adolf Hitler. So it was kind of, I don't know. Maybe it just shows I was an unconscionable, you know, little play actor or something. I don't know, but I think I kind of rather enjoyed the Blitz. And you've got to understand, you see, that the Brits were fantastic. If you have to be anywhere in really bad times, England's the place to be. Now, that
why
is largely...
Well,
one reason, of course, is that England, it tends to be in bad times anyway, whether even when it's in good times. But that somehow or other, what the Brits generally are very good at is kind of resigned, depressed... acceptance. In the book I quote, there's a wonderful thing that you used to be able to buy in these sort of seaside resorts, the sort of thing you would now put on a t-shirt, except that in those days it used to be on a piece of wood and burnt in with poker work. And it goes, "Cheer up," they said, "things could be worse." So I did, and they were. And that's a very, very...
So that got you through the Blitz?
Yeah, and the whole of England was like that. It was a kind of good place to be. It was sort of, people were very nice and have a nice cup of tea, darling, you know, as your house disappeared around you. You know, they never panicked. There was no shouting or screaming. The food was terrible, but in those days the food was always terrible. And finally they had an excuse for it. England was a very good place to be in the Blitz, and I think it taught me something about, I don't know, to kind of use a rather old-fashioned word, behaviour. They behave very well. So I think that was all right. I don't regret that at all.
Well, I want to talk some more, but first we have to take a very short break. And my guest is Al Alvarez. He's a poet, he's a novelist, literary critic, and he's got a new book, and it's called... Night, Nightlife, Night Language, Sleep, and Dreams. We'll be back after a very short break. This is Fresh Air. I am speaking with writer Al Alvarez, and his latest book is called Night. Let's talk about poker.
What a lovely idea.
Which I know is something near and dear to your heart. When did you start playing poker?
Quite late. I didn't start till I was about 30. And I was, like all... beginner pokers, poker players, the most terrible player. But I took it rather seriously and I kind of worked at it, and I love it. I love it for the same reasons that I love the Blitz, because you get a certain amount of adrenaline rush from it, but you also have to think really carefully and really subtly and observe and so on. My problems with poker, I'm a good poker player. I mean, say I'm a good, you know, better than average poker player. But my problem is I'm not a mathematician. And when you go to Vegas, where I've played a lot, you see these guys and they tend to look like they've got, you know, you can see the straw coming out of them, the corner of their mouth. They come on like hillbillies and hicks. But they can tell you, they can look at a pot and tell you to within, without blinking, tell you to within two decimal points the odds of making the hand. And I can't do that. I wish I could. I can give you rough odds on certain things, but I can't give you that sort of odds. But I've got other talents.
Well, let me find out about your talents, because you wrote a piece in The New Yorker saying that poker players have card sense, psychological insight, good memory, controlled aggression, mathematical know-how, patience, and money management skills. Which do you, of those do you have?
I am developing what is known in Vegas as a leather ass. I'm getting very good at that.
That's called patience, right? To
patience.
Us non-players.
to you out there, it's called patience.
Right.
Yeah. I'm very good at reading people. I'm observant. I'm a poet. I can sniff things out. I can sniff them out sometimes.
You play for pretty high stakes, or you have played for pretty high stakes. Is that right?
Yes, I have. Yeah, I educated two children put them through expensive English schools through courtesy of a poker game. But that's a long time ago.
Well, I assume if you win big, then you lose big, too.
Yeah, well, that's we got it in one, actually. Yeah. Well, I tell you the other thing that's really interesting about poker, and maybe this even goes back to what we were talking about earlier about fear of the dark in some convoluted way, and that is that the one thing that you mustn't do in poker is let your ego get involved. Once you think, I want to get that guy, I don't like him, or he's unpleasant, I really want to get even, then you're finished. You've got no hope at all. And I give you an example of this. My children's education depended on the fact there was a guy playing in this particular game who was quite a sophisticated man. He knew a great deal about the fine arts. He wrote a bit. He was extremely rich. He knew about wines. He was a cultivated guy, yeah? But he was a lousy poker player, a seriously lousy poker player. But he was very conceited, and he couldn't believe that these guys, whom he looked on as rather inferior figures, were beating hell out of him. And then they were outwitting him and just knew what they were doing, and he didn't. And as a result, he lost a huge amount of money in this game, scattered it around like confetti, and until he kind of got bored with being beaten and left. But the point was, it was pure ego. He thought he was the cat's whiskers, and he couldn't believe that there was something he really wasn't very good at. And once you get, and I love that sense that you have to have your ego under control, which is actually something that writers are often find difficult to do.
Well, let me ask you about whether playing poker even helps your writing, or whether it's a kind of escape from writing.
Oh, I tell you, that's a very simple question. The thing about writing is that it is really, really the loneliest occupation on earth. It's like being a lighthouse keeper without the sea to look at. I would say it's got nothing to do with the bohemian life. Writing is a sedentary middle-class occupation, like being a psychoanalyst or a chartered accountant or something. But the only difference is you don't get to see patients or clients, that you just get yourself. As I say, I feel like a lighthouse keeper. I'm up in my study at the top of the house. I used to go for a walk for an hour every afternoon on the heath. Now I've got a messed up ankle, and so I can't even do that. I go out, when the point about going down and playing cards is you're sitting down at the table with seven or eight other people. That even if all they say is check, bet, fold, take it, that, they're still talking. It's better than nothing.
Al Alvarez is a poker player, poet, critic, and writer. His latest book is called Night. This is Fresh Air.